This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Elaine Donnelly, president of the Center for Military Readiness. We want to get her insights as both the full House of Representatives and the Senate Armed Services Committee vote to repeal what's known as the Don't Ask, Don't Tell rule when it comes to homosexuals serving in the U.S. military. Elaine is here to explain what the law actually says about homosexuals serving in the military and what the House and Senate would actually accomplish through doing this. And Elaine, thanks so much for doing this.
Nice to talk with you.
What exactly is the law right now?
The law says that homosexuals are not eligible to be in the armed forces. There is a separate policy called Don't Ask, Don't Tell that says something different. It says that you can be in the military and be gay as long as you don't say that you're homosexual. But Congress never voted for that concept. It's rather convoluted. They knew it would be difficult to explain or defend in court. So instead, they passed the actual law, the one I described first. It says homosexuals are not eligible to serve. Bill Clinton imposed the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy in administrative rules. But what's happened right now is the members of the House and the Senate committee have voted to eliminate the underlying law, the statute, Section 654, Title 10. This is a serious, serious issue. It's one that should not be underestimated. It's going to cause an awful lot of problems for our military. And we're supporting Senator John McCain, who said that he will fight it on the floor of the Senate after the recess is over. It's very difficult to watch so much dishonesty on the floor of the House on the part of the advocates. But I'm proud of the Republicans for resisting.
And we'll talk about some of those issues that concern you in just a moment. From what we heard earlier this year, President Obama suggested repealing this in his State of the Union message. And basically what we saw after that was that Defense Secretary Gates wanted a rather extended review of the policy. If, in fact, this gets signed into law, the Pentagon's hands are pretty much tied at that point, correct?
Well, only three people will have a say here. The chairman of, or rather the service chiefs of the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines, they've been cut out of this process. Since the law, if this succeeds, will no longer be there, it says that the three, the triumvirate, they're supposed to decide if there are any negative effects to recruiting, retention, none of which is defined, of course, and then they're supposed to certify that everything is just fine. Well, why wouldn't they certify everything is fine since they're the ones who instigated this policy in the first place?
You mentioned that you heard a lot of dishonesty, particularly in the floor debate in the House of Representatives. What in particular do you think was deceptive?
Well, I was particularly offended by the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, saying, well, this repeal bill doesn't really repeal the law. All you have to do is read it. It says hereby Section 654, Title 10 is repealed, but with this little caveat that, well, it'll have to be certified as not being harmful to the military by the three people, the triumvirate, the president, Admiral Mullen, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and the Secretary of Defense. The latter is, of course, a political appointee. These three already have their minds made up. So this is only a little fig leaf. It's just a delay. But for all practical purposes, people in the military have already got the message. This law is repealed. The service chiefs' objections have been overruled. So why, say, 8 months from now, if the same service chiefs say, well, we have problems with this, why would anyone pay any more attention to what they say then than they're paying attention now? You see how dishonest it is to pretend that somehow this is not a full repeal of the law? It just doesn't make sense.
Elaine, talk a little bit about what those service chiefs had concerns about regarding the bringing in of homosexuals into the military and what you foresee happening step by step if this happens.
Well, these letters were very brief, and actually they talked only about the importance of military voices being heard by the working group that is reviewing this issue at the Pentagon right now. Why would members of Congress want to insult our troops by saying, your voices don't matter? The only thing that matters to us is the political promise made by President Obama when he ran for president. The LGBT left, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender left, they are counting on this president. They've demanded that he impose his will on the Congress. The Congress, unfortunately, has abnegated its responsibility for the military under the United States Constitution. They have put into the hands of only three people the president and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and the Secretary of Defense, all of them associated with President Obama, they're saying, well, we're going to let you decide how we're going to deal with these problems. Now, what are the problems? If you pretend that sexuality does not matter, it's the same thing as saying that henceforth military men will live in private quarters with military women with no separation at all. How would that work? Well, it would be extremely disruptive for a number of reasons. Secondly, there would be a corollary policy of zero tolerance of anyone who disagrees. This would affect the chaplains first, but certainly any one of the major military, faiths, anybody in the military who are part of those faiths, Catholic, Christian, even Muslim and Orthodox Jewish, they would be affected because their attitudes would henceforth be considered unacceptable. There would also be issues of training. You would have to teach the LGBT concept in all military schools, including the largest school system in the world. That would be the Department of Defense schools. This is quite radical because the military doesn't do things halfway. And if people find themselves out of step with the new paradigm, the LGBT law, they would have no recourse but to leave, not re-enlist. This would not happen overnight, certainly not in only a matter of months, but it's something that gradually will indeed undermine and perhaps break the all-volunteer force.
Elaine, do you suspect that the Senate will have any trouble passing this? It seemed like there was not a real cliffhanger in the House on Thursday night.
I think they will have trouble because Senator McCain is going to put up a stiff fight against it. Unlike the House that allowed only 5 minutes for debate on both sides, even though the Republicans tried to squeeze in very small bites of time what major arguments were, on the Senate side it will be perhaps different. And yes, the proponents will be out there talking about their usual false arguments, complaining about personal human interest stories. They will advance the LGBT agenda, but they won't call it that. They'll call it a civil rights agenda, even though that's really the weakest argument of all. Because if it really were valid, we would have military women living with military men 24/7, no separation, no privacy whatsoever, and then putting up with all of the consequences of that. It's the equivalent of creating a hostile work environment. Why are we doing this, and why are we affecting all of our men and women in all branches and communities of the service without even listening to their voices before the decision is made? There's a reason for this, by the way. Why did they do it now? Because they know that in the fall, they may very well not have those votes. If they had brought the bill up at the time when the working group report comes out, even if the report says, oh, this is fine, we're all for gays in the military, there will still be information in that report that will be more than enough for members of Congress to say, wait a minute, this is not a good idea. That's why they had to rush. That's why they had to overrule the four service chiefs who wrote strong letters protesting this. It's most unfortunate that this was allowed to happen, but that is exactly what happened.
Elaine, we'll keep on top of it. We'll be back in touch with you, I'm sure. Thanks so much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Elaine Donnelly is president of the Center for Military Readiness. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily.